Welcome to radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to firehouse.com.
Welcome to the September 2008 Firehouse Magazine Insider. I'm here today with Larry Sagan, the author of the article Recruiting and Retaining Diversity, a perspective from some thought leaders. Good morning, Larry, and thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about the article? I know this is the second part in a series. What is the article or the series of articles going to look at as the magazines come out? And kind of some of your background with this topic.
Hi, Peter. Good morning. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm the founder and executive director of a nonprofit organization called Fire 2020. And we're committed to helping the fire service to truly reflect the communities that they serve by the year 2020. We were involved about 2.5 years ago in winning a fire prevention and safety research grant from the Department of Homeland Security to study firefighter and civilian safety in multicultural communities. And we did the research in Seattle, Austin, and Milwaukee. We also did a pilot study with a grant from the International Association of Fire Chiefs up in Calgary. And in the four cities, we ran over 90 focus groups, did well over 1,000 questionnaires, both online and on paper, to really try to understand some of the issues in fire departments working in many of these multicultural communities. And we found some very, very interesting things that had never really been formalized before or documented before. There are some issues. Language and communication is a big issue in many of the communities. Firefighters, for the most part, are not speaking the languages of their different communities. And that does come up, specifically comes up more in medical calls and in natural disasters than it does in fighting fires. A second thing that came up was trust issues. And the trust issues, Peter, are really interesting. We keep seeing in the Harris polls that firefighters are at the top of the list in terms of being one of the most trusted professions in the country. But when we started to peel back the onion skins and go out into some of the communities, specifically immigrant and refugee communities, the elderly communities, the gay and lesbian communities, what we found was that people generalize when they see anybody in uniform. So they don't necessarily separate fire from police or fire from military if they'd come from another country. And so based on some of their historic memory, if they came from a country where there was a lot of violence, they see firefighters as a person in uniform and don't necessarily trust them. In Austin, where there's a large Hispanic population, many of whom may be there illegally, they don't trust that a firefighter is not going to turn them in or send them back to their country. So the trust issues came up, and with elderly, we've had a lot of publicity recently about issues of people being ripped off, people dressed up like firefighters or police officers coming in, saying they're checking smoke alarms and then stealing. So we discovered that in the elderly focus groups, they also weren't necessarily so trusting if somebody came and knocked on their door and they were a firefighter.
That's very interesting. That's not something I've ever heard before.
Yeah. And again, you know, sometimes when the media is is taking things forward of a single incident. What ends up happening is we end up scaring a lot of people, and then we end up with a lot of copycats. So sometimes it kind of comes back to haunt us. That's not saying we shouldn't report it, but it was an interesting fact that elderly had some fear of trusting people coming into their homes. The third thing had to do with proactive relationships. And every fire department deals with this differently, but based on our interviews in these four cities, one of the things that we heard was that the fire culture is very, very good when the bell goes off. There's nobody that people would rather have around when they're in the middle of an emergency. And firefighters tend to respond and are at their best when that alarm goes off. But oftentimes they are not going out in non-emergency times proactively building relationships with different aspects of the community. So sometimes prevention people are taking that on, but a lot of the departments don't really have designated prevention people. So what happens is that there's not a relationship there before the emergency happens, and as a result, that impacts some of the trust. And it will really also impact both recruitment and prevention, because what we learned in the fourth piece is that there's knowledge gaps. The firefighters don't really understand, at least they didn't in the four cities, a lot of the cultural issues in the different multicultural communities. On the same hand, the communities don't really know what the fire departments do. Again, we're on the inside. We think everybody knows what we do, but I can't tell you the number of times in the focus groups how many people said, I called for a medical emergency and a fire truck showed up. Why? They were not aware that fire and EMS are necessarily tied together in their community. And some people were embarrassed, and this gets back to some of the cultural issues, that they don't want to make a mistake. They don't want to create a spectacle in their neighborhood. In many of the Asian cultures, in some of the African cultures, that is an embarrassment. So if somebody's having a heart palpitation and they call 911 and a fire truck shows up with four people on it and the sirens running, they are embarrassed. So they didn't know all the things that the fire departments did. And in the process of running the focus groups, what we learned was that they really do want to know more. But again, without proactive outreach from the fire department, that connection just wasn't being made.
Looking at some of the folks, for instance, the hiring practices, and I don't know how familiar you would be in this field, but several police officers I know were chosen mostly throughout the Northeast based upon their language skills, Spanish speaking, etc. Would a fire department hire somebody, or do you know if a fire department hires based upon those types of skills, or are they just looking for somebody who's you know, physically fit and ready to go through the fire academy?
I think it's becoming a greater issue. The departments that are really forward-thinking have had this on their agenda for some period of time now. And, for example, Austin offers an additional point if you are multilingual and you have to pass a test. So you get an extra test point, and then if you are certified in the languages that they have on their list, you also get some additional pay. So I think that's Austin was really, you know, needing to take a look at that, and have been doing a good job with it. San Jose has really been taking the lead, and they have actually been tracking calls coming in to 911, and I am not sure about this, but I think that they are the first in the country to be doing that, which is really giving them some important demographic information about what languages are important and the kinds of situations that language issues play out, both positively and negatively. There are a number of other departments that do specifically recruit bilingual firefighters. Not that many are giving incentives on the testing side. It's very interesting, though, because traditionally it hasn't been something that has been seen as important. It's been much more physical fitness, you know, mechanical aptitude. But I think the leading fire departments, especially in our larger metropolitan areas where they are dealing with many different cultures, many different languages, are beginning to see that the ability to communicate is every bit as important as being physically fit and having mechanical aptitude. It's playing out in many respects on a bigger scale simply because of the fact that we're spending much less time fighting fire and much more time in emergency medical response.
Okay, and looking at diversity in the station, the fire station, what's the biggest issue or the top 2 to 3 issues that you find within the station amongst the members?
Well, I think, again, it gets down to why is it important that a fire department better reflects and represents the community. And back in the late 70s, early 80s, when the courts got involved and we had affirmative action, one of the things that happened that kind of came back and really bit us was that we lowered standards because the court said you had to hire so many African Americans, so many Hispanics, so many Asians, so many women, etc. And so although our numbers increased, and that was a good thing, we needed to have our numbers increased. And in all honesty, I don't really know, and there might be, some of the listeners to this might know of some, but I don't really know of any situations where people died or people were injured because, quote, the concept was we lowered standards. But that was an issue that got raised. And so the numbers increased, but what we didn't do was we didn't prepare the environment. And this is a very, very strong culture. That's not a bad thing or a good thing. It just is. And so what we were doing was in the late 70s, early 80s, up through the early 90s, we were really pushing a culture change in the makeup of our fire departments with increased diversity. People came in, there was a lot of hazing that went on. People were given the silent treatment. It was not well set up for women. They were expected to be using the same bathrooms. You know, the old culture of hanging pornography in their lockers. None of that had really been addressed before to prepare the environment for people coming in who were different than the old culture. And so what ended up happening was, if something is really good, we go out and we tell one person or two people. When something is bad, we go out and we tell 7 to 10 people. That's marketing information that corporations use. And so when people got treated poorly, they ended up going out telling people, this is not a good profession if you're African American. This is not a good profession if you're female. So we're kind of back at the same place or nearly at the same place, especially when you consider that a lot of the diversity that came in the late 70s and early 80s is all coming up on retirement time. So in terms of what we do, it is really a decision from the chief. Chief Deborah Mesko in Madison has really taken a lead stance on this. And her belief, and we talk about this in the article that's coming out this month, that the chief really has to be involved in leading the charge. And that gets filtered down. Every chief officer has to be involved. There really is a zero tolerance policy that has to be set and has to be enforced. That's how the environment in the stations itself is really going to change and work for everybody who's there. The issue is, does the department really see value in having a more diverse workforce? In the corporate world, in the business world, many of the companies, most of the companies, have noticed that because of the change in our demographics, And the Census Department says now, by 2042, we're going to be a minority-majority country. So they're saying, wait a second, that's 30% of our market. There's money to be made there. We need to invent products. We need to be able to serve as people who are from other cultures who speak other languages. It's a dollar bottom line issue. In the fire service, we've never really been able to make that issue. So what our research showed was that diversity is important because it keeps us safer and it allows us to really expand our prevention efforts. So if a department is focused on putting wet stuff on the red stuff, you don't necessarily have to speak another language. You don't have to understand grieving issues in a different culture. But if you're having to build relationships, deal with people, help them in medical emergencies, it's better that we reflect that community. In terms of women, women bring so much to the fire service, and that has probably been a bigger stumbling block than the minorities issue. And a lot has been made about the strength. What we have seen in departments that are creating mentoring programs to help women get prepared for taking CPAT or another physical agility test, that women's pass rates are going up. We're not lowering standards. We're just helping to train people to take the test and to be successful. And they're being very successful firefighters. When people raise the issue of, well, that person's not qualified, they're not strong enough, the irony of all of this, and this is probably going to come back and haunt me, but when we say women aren't strong enough, they, you know, that, yeah, okay, they pass the test, but they're really not strong enough, and then we see somebody who weighs 300 pounds and can't fit into their turnout gear, and they've been on for 10 years, the issue is really, do we see a value in having women in our fire service? And the more medical response we're doing, the more we're dealing with females as our customers, and women from other cultures where gender-to-gender issues is an issue, it's more important than ever to make sure that we have a diverse gender-diverse workforce.
And looking at that, the article does mention several of the different camps and some of the different programs out there that, that open up the fire service to prepare folks to join. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences with those? And is it Camp Blaze, I believe, was one of them? And we'll put some links on a podcast player page to some of the different places, and I'm sure there's some stuff on fire2020.org. But can you tell us your experiences with the folks that have gone through those academies and, you know, how well has it prepared them? Would they pass it along to other firefighter hopefuls?
Yeah. The camps idea came here in the West Coast and was really started by a number of female firefighters who really wanted to go out and help young women, both to educate them about this as a career choice. Because without a lot of female firefighters, we don't have a lot of role models. And we heard a whole bunch of times, well, when the fire truck goes by, if I don't see a woman on there, then I don't think that that's really a very good profession for women. So some women from different departments on the West Coast created a concept called Camp Blaze. It's being held now every other summer, and it's being held at the training center outside of Seattle. And women firefighters volunteer as counselors, and I believe Camp Blaze is 15 to 19, I think, but I'm not sure. It may be 15 to 18.
That's, I believe it's 14 to 19.
14 to 19. Thank you. Some of the camps have different age levels, so I apologize, 14 to 19. And so the female firefighters volunteer as counselors, and it's a week experience. The great thing about these summer camps, and there's now five of them in the U.S. and one in Canada, is that they're not only focused on fire and emergency services preparation, but it's also been designed so that young women come out of this feeling empowered, that they're educated, that they're motivated, and that they've had a great camp experience. So we hear the counselors and some of the young women talk about the fact that when they came in, they didn't think they could do certain things, and by the end of the week, they're very confident. It's been a great confidence builder. And to have that kind of a support system going through is not only helping to prepare them to take a look at a career as a firefighter, but it's really helping to prepare them for life. And we haven't really done that, again, understanding that this has not been a traditional job for women. So the camp experience, we hear nothing but positive things about. The challenge is it's basically all volunteer. So raising the money, each of the camps does their own fundraising. It's not something that the fire service has climbed on board with. And that's an agenda that we're really starting to push, is this is something that's really working. And another program that I would mention that I think is a real exemplary program that's focusing both on young women and young men is down in Austin, and it's called LBJ Academy. And retired fire chief Florencio Solis had this as a vision and worked with the school district to put together a cadet program for 11th and 12th graders. And they're doing it in a school that I think 95% of the students are minorities or young women. And the interesting thing is that they spend their afternoons in fire science programs, and during the mornings they're in their regular classes. All of their grades across the board have gone up. They formed relationships with firefighters who are teaching the classes, and Flo made sure that the best instructors from the fire department who really could relate to kids were the ones teaching in the cadet program. And so they're getting some tutoring in their other classes. All their grades are going up. And they had a challenge getting this going the first year, and the kids did so well that now a number of other schools in Austin are all wanting to start the same kind of program. There's a great program in Cleveland that's doing many of the same kinds of things. Washington, D.C. has a high school cadet program. Fort Wayne, Indiana has got a great high school cadet program. L.A. has got a high school cadet program. What we're seeing, just like in the camps, is it's building relationships with our future generation that's really the encouraging piece that's helping them to come in and be prepared and to learn the culture so that when they come to take the test, they're going to score at the top of their class, not they're coming in uninformed about what the fire service and the fire culture is about. And that's the thing that we haven't really understood, is that unfortunately people who grow up in a family are getting an informal education at night over dinner, on the weekends when they go to the fire station. So when they test and they come in for an interview, they already know pretty much what to say. They know how the system operates. When somebody's coming in new and they haven't had that historical perspective, they're kind of one step behind already. And so these camps, these cadet programs are really helping to educate the next generation.
All right. Well, we'll put some links on there and try to direct some of the listeners to that. So make sure you check out the podcast player page for those links. And the last question I have for you is, within the article, there's a subheadline. It says work from the inside out. And you write, if a department is going to attract and retain diverse firefighters and paramedics, it needs to be welcoming, working, and it needs to be a welcoming working environment, living environment for everyone. Do you have any advice for the company officers to make sure that the firehouse work conditions are even amongst all the members? And you touched on it before, but is there one or two things that really could go for every fire station in the country to kind of equal things out?
There's two issues here. One is that we all come from a different place, and we're bringing in our values and our historical behaviors. And the fire service is a unique profession in that it's a living and working environment. We're on for 24 hours at least in this country. In the UK, they've actually gone off the 24-hour shift, and they've noticed that some of the issues have gone away. It's difficult because in most of our lives, outside of the fire service, you know, we come to work and we behave properly at work, and then we go home or we go out in with our friends, and we've got, you know, something beyond the 8 hours that we were at our work shift where, you know, we can be who we, quote, who we really are. In the fire service, when we're on for at least 24 hours at one time, we don't have that. So a lot of the diversity training that's given is about trying to gain some understanding. And what we found is that a lot of the diversity training really hasn't worked very well. People still are who they are. So some of the chiefs have taken on the perspective of, I don't really care who you are, but here's the rules. And when you're at work, this is what you will observe, and this is how you will behave. And that's the easiest thing to track. The challenge is that people still have their attitudes. So if there's a firefighter who still doesn't really value the work that women do in the fire service, and who cares why that is? I mean, maybe it's because they're married and they don't value their wife, or they had a sister that they didn't really get along with. Whatever it is, they're bringing it in their history to work. So first and foremost, a policy, a zero-tolerance policy that has to be held to. And that means that captains and lieutenants can't let things slip by. They've got to be on it. They can't be making the same faux pas. But the second thing is that we need to just, when these situations come up, in dealing with diversity issues, specifically around women, we need to understand there needs to be separate quarters for women. We need to allow people to have privacy. And if an issue comes up, we need to say to somebody, is this how you'd want your sister treated? Is this how you'd want your mother treated? And I think sometimes we're afraid to ask those harder questions. And I think that, again, it needs to come from the top down, and it really needs to be reinforced as this is a value in this department, and this is what we stand for, and I'm not going to stand for anything less than that. Deborah Mesqua, Chief of Mesqua from Madison, in the article, talks about how she has really helped to change the whole value of the department in their ability to care, in their ability to have compassion for each other and for the customers. And that comes out. The way we treat ourselves is really the way we treat our customers. And I think that that's what, you know, the departments really need to take a look at and really need to put some emphasis on.
All right. Well, Larry, thank you very much. Again, the article looks at diversity in the September 2008 issue of Firehouse Magazine. And we were talking with Larry Sagan today. To learn more about Fire 2020, visit the website fire2020.org. And there's plenty of information on there, well beyond what we were able to get to today. So, Larry, thank you for joining us. And we look forward to the next few articles that that will be coming out in Firehouse.
That's great. Peter, can I mention one other thing?
Sure.
We have been working to develop a new recruitment tool called Why I Chose Fire. And it is a six-minute video. Firehouse.com is going to help to distribute the link. We're giving it away free to the fire service. So fire departments can stream it for free. They can go on the link to our website or just go directly to our website and fill out a form that identifies what their demographics are in their department, and then they can download one copy for use in their department. And it features interviews with women of all cultures and men of color that they can use when they're out talking to high school classes. For example, during prevention week or at career fairs or if they're out speaking in the community to the Rotary Club. And it really features people talking about why they love this as a career. We got permission from a rap artist by the name of Common, who's very popular now with young people, and Will.i.am, who's with the Black Eyed Peas, and they donated a great song called A Dream that samples Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And that's coming out on the 15th of September. And there's also a user guide that has some suggestions about how to increase their recruitment efforts specifically for young women of all cultures and young men of color. So that will be available. And again, it is free to the fire department. Some departments have asked us about customizing a front end to put a message from their chief on it and their department logo and some recruitment facts about their department, and we're happy to talk to them about it. There would be a small fee for that, but they can use the video as is.
All right, great. All right, Larry. Well, thank you very much, and look for the article in the September issue of Firehouse.
Thanks, Peter.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to Firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.